Today's program is brought to you by the International Culinary Center, offering courses that range from classic French techniques in culinary, pastry, and bread baking to Italian studies to management, from culinary technology to food writing, from cake making to wine tasting. For more information, visit culinarycenter.com.
I'm Linda Palacio, host of A Taste of the Past. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Welcome to Word of Mouth with Lady Sue.
You're listening to Word of Mouth with Leyte Sue on heritageradionetwork.org. You can also download and listen to the show through iTunes or Stitcher. I'm your host, Leyte. When not in the air, my job is to eat and drink and connect people. I'm out and abouting, having the very conversations that you hear here and working with my clients, which include chefs, sommeliers, big brand startups, those doing what's most innovative and delicious. First off, at the Green Market this AM, we caught up with founding exec chef of EMP, 11 Madison Park, Carrie Heffernan, who's also a huge seafood advocate, a regular at the Green Market, and can it be? Is spring really here? Then in a few minutes, live in the studio, we'll welcome Chef Elizabeth Faulkner, president of Women Chefs and Restaurateurs. In a past life, she was for many years the chef owner of the beloved SF institution, Citizen Cake. You've seen her on Top Chef and Chopped as competitor and judge, and we'll talk her move to NYC, plus current projects like the upcoming WCR conference, and mom, and being a mommy in the kitchen. Stay to the end, because to wind it down, we'll catch up with sommelier Matt Bostic of Osteria Mozza in LA about a couple of Italian grapes I've never heard of that he's loving. Let's go to the Green Market. We're at the Union Square Green Market with our friend
Carrie Heffernan.
Chef Carrie Heffernan. Good morning.
Good morning, lady. How are you?
Very good. Now that I can be outside without being in pain.
Almost wore shorts today. It's gorgeous.
And I am hungry this morning.
Well, it's been a long, cold winter, and we've, you know, as much as I love root vegetables, we've got some amazing new bright greens from our great friend Nevia Noe at Bodhi Tree.
We are at Bodhi Tree, and it's her first day back, right?
First day back from the winter, coming out of the thaw like the rest of us.
So, welcome back, Nevia, and what are you eyeing today?
All right, so she's got beautiful spinach, mosh, kale, and some amazing watermelon radishes. And I just think that after, you know, a long winter of root vegetables, much as I love them, it's nice to have something fresh and green and local.
I know that, that spinach is like the famed thing that kids don't like to eat, but I'm such a sucker for spinach, so let's talk about the spinach.
So this spinach has a beautiful red stem to it, and it's just kind of, you know, gorgeous and bright, you know, and I'm excited to try it probably in the simplest fashion because it's still a little bit supple and young, you know, something in the Korean style where they just use a little bit of sesame oil and salt. I mean, they can maybe a touch of garlic. It's amazing how simple those four ingredients could be and how good it could come out. Just wilted, and that's it.
Yum. And how about the watermelon radishes? We just had a taste of those.
Watermelon radishes, I think, are great. Obviously raw, you know, sliced, shredded. You know, they're all the rage now in fish tacos. I like to sort of chew them between, you know, courses to give you that bright, clean, spicy, you know, that digestive, you know, quality
power.
They have to them. Yes, power. The other thing you can do with radishes is actually cook them. So if you trim them and treat them like a little turnip, you know, and cook them in salted water, and I toss them in, you know, butter and chives, I think they're sublime.
So if Nevia is doing these in greenhouse, you know, why is it her first day back? Can we just have them all winter long?
It's been such a brutal winter that even greenhousing has had, you know, it's taken its toll. In other words, the cold weather has killed many vegetables inside the greenhouse with all the accommodations you can try and make. So,
wow.
Yeah.
Okay, so without greenhouse action, when would we normally see these veggies
in the ground?
This year? Well, apparently there's still snow on the ground. I know there's snow on the ground in Sag Harbor at my house out there. So, I mean, you can't even really dig the soil for another couple of days at best if it keeps up like this. And then I really wouldn't imagine you'd have anything coming up until early May.
All right, so now that we're... So, March in like a lion, out like a lamb?
We hope so.
Is that what they say? Because it was definitely a lion. We have the spring to look forward to. Of what's not yet at the market, what are you most excited about that we should keep our eyes peeled for?
One of the first things that comes up in my garden is the rhubarb. So it'll poke through even the snow, you know, and these young stalks. And I think rhubarb is a very underrated, treat it like a fruit, but it's actually a vegetable, obviously. But it can be used as kind of an element in crudo, where you'd slice it thin, and it has that, you know, the crispness of celery and the sort of acid bite of lemon. So that, the other thing I look for in the wild is the, what I call the garlic chives, the one that grow in your front yard, lawn onions. So those two things, and then the first, you know, fluke of the year would make a great crudo.
My tagline should be all about the alliums.
All about the alliums, absolutely.
Thank you so much, Carrie.
Thank you.
Welcome back to Word of Mouth with Leyte Sue on Heritage Radio Network. If you love what you hear, do connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. I am at Leyte Sue, LeitiHSU. We're at Heritage_radio. And as always, hashtag WOM, short for Word of Mouth, WOMSHOW. And with that, I am so pleased to welcome today's people we like. Elizabeth Faulkner, chef owner of the beloved SF spot Citizen Cake for 14 years before she picked up. And now we have her here with us in New York City.
Hello.
Welcome.
Hi.
Thank you so much for the granola. I've never had a guest bring me granola before.
Really?
Yeah. That's so nice of you.
Something that we should just always have around.
You know? I just see you as the granola fairy. Like every single person you run into, you're just like, sprinkle some granola.
That's a good one too. It's got lots of good stuff for you. I've been really into just trying to eat really, like really paying attention to what's going into my body. Even though I'll indulge in, you know, eat all kinds of stuff, I'm still like on a regular basis, I'm more cautious about it.
So you've been on like 30 different episodes of all these different competition shows that you love doing it. Not all chefs do.
I love it. I love the sport of it. I've always been kind of a athletic person. I played competitive soccer for a long time in my life, and I do like Korean sword fighting, kickboxing, all kinds of CrossFit stuff at my Equinox gym, and I do put out Pilates and yoga and stuff like that too. But I love those food show competition shows because it's like the combination of culinary and running as fast as you can to get something done. And it's like I never know exactly what I'm going to make or what kind of random ingredients they're going to throw at you, but I kind of like that sort of chaos, finding order in the chaos.
You're going to have pressure in public.
Yeah, and there's something about performance art of it too that I've always loved. It's a good stage for me.
So I first met you when you did this tremendous installation with Maxime Bellet, where it was like, okay, let's try to explain it. It was so cool. It almost felt like high school art project again, like made me happy in my heart. A cardboard front that was like had ants on it and it looked like an anthill, and then you stuck your hand into a hole.
Yeah, let me explain.
Okay.
I like your memory of it. Because I had met him at Worlds of Flavor in Napa and at CIA, and he said, you've got to do something for me for the future of food show thing, or it wasn't really a show, but like a food experience.
Showcase, yeah.
Yeah. And it was only in a couple weeks in New York, and I said, well, I've got this great installation that I would like to do called Apocalyptic Caviar, and it's sort of about the future of food and, you know, sort of our growing population and some of the issues I have around sustainability and seafood and stuff like that. And but it's kind of a fun experience, and I've always loved haunted houses. I used to make them. I just took my brother to Sleep No More again. That was my second time I went there. I just love that kind of like interactive kind of art, and in a way, restaurants are kind of like that. So I just did that where I built a screen did a rear projection of an anthill, and then had my friend and I drew all these ants, and kind of just, you know, we had to kind of do the punk rock version of it. And but the whole idea is you stick your hands in a latex glove as a guest, and I say, welcome to the future. It's a little bit, you know, it's a little bit of a freak show because it's like, you know, we don't have any more fish for caviar, but I found a little bit, and so we have to do these pop-up stands, and you stick your hand through the ant hole and sort of get a little pinch of caviar on your hand. I put a little creme fraiche, toasted breadcrumbs, and lemon and chives on your hand, and you eat out of your hand.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's just kind of a fun way to look at sort of issues around wealth and poverty and sustainability. And it's a really different experience. And it's tasty, you know, so people loved it, but they were like, this is so strange, but it's so fabulous, too.
The texture was so anti. It was like, yeah. I just found that to be so much fun. So are you doing more installations these days? Because I know that's a big thing that you love doing.
In the last year, since I've really not been working in restaurants full-time, I've been thinking more about what it is that I like to do. And since I have a fine art background, before I ever got into the sort of food revolution that I definitely was so excited about in California for so many years. And I think that I'm just at this point where I'd like to do more theatrical pieces around food and ways to make you experience food differently. And in a lot of ways, that's kind of what I've always done. That's why I got into cake making, because I just thought, why do wedding cakes look like that? They could look like this. They could look like a Frank Gehry building, you know, and they could be really tasty, and it could be about architecture from the inside out instead of just something to look at and then just, I don't know. I found them so boring. I always like question, like, why when we think of breakfast that we think of scrambled eggs and bacon, why when we think of a carrot cake does it look like a little carrot cake with marzipan carrots? Why, it could look different.
Yeah.
You know, so I that's just what I like to do.
I like to eat spaghetti for breakfast.
I do, too. I like to eat salad for breakfast, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll eat anything at any given time of day.
Yeah. I think it's fun to kind of break up your sort of habits that way, too.
How's it been feeling to settle into New York and also have this, like, I mean, I know at first it was nerve-wracking, perhaps, to not be associated with a restaurant.
Well, I mean, I came to New York and opened up a pizza place in Brooklyn, for another owner, and then I went to another restaurant on the Upper West Side and opened that up. And they were both, you know, exciting projects and very intense, and it could be because opening a restaurant for the first, you know, year is so intense. And I only stayed with them for about 6 months each. And then finally, and I do so much television here and there and appearances, and here I'm so hyper-involved with Women Chefs and Restaurateurs, and found myself being, you know, the next president. And I thought, I don't know, I'm not going to have time for a restaurant right now. So I intentionally sort of said, I'm going to step away from restaurants for a little bit and see what else I can do.
And was that...
And so it's actually been good because I've been really busy with WCR and putting this conference together in New York that we're totally excited about. And just because I do so many other little projects and it's sort of like I'm on the next chapter. I've been writing a book too, about all of 26 years on the line.
So WCR is back in New York after 20 years.
Yeah, very exciting. This is an organization that I've actually been a member of since it started 23 years ago. One of my chefs who I used to work for in San Francisco was one of the founders. And it was founded by eight women who, at that point, about 25 years ago, they felt like women weren't getting a lot of media attention or the respect that they were already, you know, running all these kitchens and doing some amazing things and changing the way we eat. And they thought, you know, we need to have our own club, basically. And we need to promote women, support women, and connect them, and continually educate them in this industry.
So what can we expect in this year's lineup? I had a look at it. It's star-studded. It's really exciting.
What's fun about being in New York now, too, is that I have always had a lot of chef friends all over the place, but here in New York. And then I've, you know, gone to all of this amazing talent that we have here, whether they're television personalities or PR people or journalists or chefs and mixologists. And, you know, I mean, we've just got so many cool artisans, you know, so many people involved in this conference and every aspect of it.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. So I'm feeling like there's been a recent mini revolution of more organizations for women, food women and restaurant women. you know, with Toklas and Cherry Bomb. Is something like happening right now a little bit?
Well, I would say, you know, that Time magazine piece that came out over a year ago really kind of lit a fire with a lot of women in different in a lot of different ways. But in this food world, we constantly keep getting, I mean, over the all these years that I've been cooking, I get the same question asked to me of, you know, is it hard to be a woman and a chef? And how do you balance your life out? And it's sort of the same question, like, and your answer inevitably is always like, well, it's hard for everybody. It's a really tough business. It's very kind of military in a lot of ways. It doesn't ever stop. It's like a constant theater that just never stops. And so the answer obviously is it's hard for men and women to be in this industry because it's just a tough job. It's a blue collar job. It's a little bit more glamorized these days. But the truth is it just requires a lot of work. And so I wouldn't say that it's necessarily harder for women, but there are lots of women that are working in the industry, but they just don't get the articles written about them all the time. And sometimes, like, I have a lot of friends who are more corporate chefs, or they do they really run huge, like, you know, the corporate chef for Google was a woman for a long time, and a lot of their cooks are.
Mm-hmm.
And you find a lot of women cooking in hotels, and that may be because the money's better. You know, they don't want to do it. They don't want to take too much risk because they're probably raising a family at the same time. I hear people say that you have to be an entrepreneur or you have to own your own restaurant to be a successful woman in the business. And I think I've done that too.
Well, maybe women just aren't as tempted by the need to feed your own ego by being like this glamorous chef owner of a, you know, of a...
I think that that's generally pretty true. I would say I know some women who have very strong egos. I'm one of them. And so they may not need the same kind of attention.
Mm-hmm.
But I also think that maybe culturally we don't ask for that attention. And sometimes I was saying to you earlier, I've had cooks that are female cooks and I'll say, I'm not talking to you that much only because you're doing such a great job. And if I'm talking to you all the time, it's because I don't think you're doing a very good job. So congratulations, you know, I'm going to spend some time talking to these guys over here who need so much more attention from me. And just to try, because they're like, I need help, chef. And the other, you know, some of the women I've worked with are like, they just keep their heads down and they're all over it. So I don't know. It's a weird question, but it's a hard question to answer about being female in this industry. I just really want women to have the guts to do anything that they want to.
To ask for stuff. So I love, I'm like so excited to have you on my show. It's the types of folks who come on this part of the show, really, they're, you know, chefs and restaurateurs and who've reached a certain level of, you know, I guess high profileness, and I have to watch out for my own, you know, women to men ratio.
Mm.
I think in fine dining, the numbers are even more skewed than normal. You know.
Yeah, it's interesting. I was just at a global women's food forum in Bilbao called Parabear, and it was a whole bunch of chefs from all over the world.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them were Michelin starred, and you know, Dominique Crin was there, Anita Lowe, Karen Hsu from ABC Kitchen, those two chefs, Anita and Karen, are both cooking at our WCR conference. Also,
Anita's a past guest, and Dominique is a future guest.
Yeah, Dominique's great, and so but there were so many chefs from all over the place, and they a huge contingency from Sweden, and that was kind of amazing. And you think that Scandinavia is like so ahead of the game, Denmark and Sweden, but they had some similar stories about how they just were kind of pushed out of the way a lot. And but I think that the idea that we're having this conversation that, and then, you know, Cherry Bomb coming up, and we're actually co-hosting an event with the Toklas Society.
Nice.
And for one of our parties. And I think that, you know, the good news is that there's a lot of discussion going on, different generations of chefs. I mean, WCR has been around for over two decades. So in a lot of ways, we have some older members, but we're really reaching out to work with, you know, other generations. And
older members who have done so much in the business.
Totally.
Like a pretty illustrious group of women.
Yeah. I mean, it's I, when I first went to the first conference was
first get started, because it was kind of like you were like a wee bitty one, and then
I was in my 20s. I was working at this Miyako Hotel in mm-hmm. Japantown in San Francisco, and we had the first conference at our restaurant and hotel, and all of these amazing superstars came in, and you know, it was kind of before the big television explosion of chefs, but they all had cookbooks, so of course I knew who everybody was. Mm-hmm. And I mean, for example, Nancy Silverton brought her breads up from La Brea, from Los Angeles. Gail Gand was there, Lydia Bastianich, and Anne Rosenzweig from Arcadia out here. She's amazing. And who else was there? Barbara Tropp and Joyce Goldstein were running around. Barbara Tropp is really the founder of WCR. She was such an amazing woman. She's not with us anymore, but she had a restaurant called China Moon that I just loved in San Francisco. And and Mary Sue Milliken and Susan Finnegar were over cooking in the corner, and I was just like so starstruck by everybody, and all I could think of was like, I just want to be like them. And
you were making a particular what? Pastry. What were you making?
Oh, I was in charge of, like, they were all doing the gala stuff, and I was in charge of brunch the next day when everybody was hungover. And I had to make some scones with huckleberries and Meyer lemon. And then
I can't believe you still remember that.
Well, I remember because Emily Lucchetti and Gail Gand and I think Nancy Silverton, a whole bunch of people came over and they were like, these are the most amazing scones. And I was like, okay, cool.
You're like, there's hope for me.
And I made them like blood orange sorbet and passion fruit sorbet with fresh passion fruits. And I just was like trying to think about what they might need after a night of partying.
That's so nice.
That's the nurturing side of me, yes.
So you talk, speaking of the nurturing side, you talk about how your role as head chef in the kitchen has evolved over your time in the kitchen.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, because you referred to me as being a mom, and I'm a mom of a dachshund, but no kids. But I've also felt like a mommy often in the kitchen. And that is really kind of what's... I think the most interesting psychology of what happens in the restaurant world, you know, it is a micro family in a lot of ways. And so over the years, you know, when I started Citizen Cake when I was just 30, and I was kind of like, I had people working with me who were older, more experienced bakers. And at the time I was like, well, you know, this is how we're going to do it. We're going to change it up. Nothing's going to be symmetrical, and we're going to turn everything upside down. And they were like, okay, well, she's like, you know, getting attention from James Beard Foundation and all kinds of stuff. So that's what we're going to do. Mm-hmm. And then over years, you know, I just like, you know, was doing all kinds of food stuff. And I think as I've gotten older that people, it's so interesting. Like, I just think when I'm turned 40 and I'm working with 20 something year old cooks or not even quite 20, then I start feeling I'm definitely replacing their mother at that point. I'm mm-hmm. not the like rock star young chef. I might still somewhat be a rock star, but but I'm actually starting to fit a role in with some people that where I'm kind of like their mommy or daddy, and it's a little bit weird. And I don't know if I've really enjoyed that either, because I'm like, I don't want to be your mommy. I just want to tell you, like, this is how we're going to do it.
And they have need a lot of mommying. Like,
some people do, not everybody, kids. But some people definitely have come from a harder background, and they need some strong guidance.
What I found fascinating, and we can get un-PC for a second, but just really observationally, so is that you kind of felt like maybe it came from some folks like ethnic backgrounds, like that draw towards like a mother figure.
Well, I've definitely felt like that it's such a one specific culture, mm-hmm. but I have certainly found that like in the Latin culture and you know, that if I'm the hard, you know, aggressive female mm-hmm. mommy coming at you, some people are like, I don't know why that woman's such a bitch. You know, like, why is she being such a bitch? And I'm like, well, I'm not really trying to be a biatch. I'm just trying to come at you and tell you how we're going to do things, you know? And I think that some people really, they don't like that. They get, it's, you know, I don't know.
So they're like, instead of, it's a bit like, instead of Elizabeth Chef being my boss, she's now being the mom that's like berating
me. I'm going to get spanked.
Yeah.
You know?
That's so interesting.
Yeah. It's very strange. I mean, it definitely is part of our, it's part of our thread, part of our fabric, I guess.
Well, I think every person, you work with what you got. So I look the way I do and I'm quite aware of it. And, you work with what you've got.
And somebody said at the forum in Spain that they felt like females were, somebody was like, I don't know if it was a media situation, but they were, they were going to take a picture and they either had to pose as a Madonna or a slut. And I thought, and they were devastated by the idea that they had to be one or the other.
Oh, so it was like a stylized
something like that. Yeah, it was sort of like you had to choose which one you really represented. And I thought, I stood up and I said, well, next time you go up there and demand that you're going to be the Culinetrix that you really are.
Yeah, of this whole women in food discussion, and the more you talk about, the more we're all just repeating ourselves, and it's like, blur.
Mm-hmm.
I find most interesting what's coming from inside. So I tell my mentees and my friends that I care about, my little sister, to never unnecessarily use the word sorry or to not use the word trying. It's just a lot of it really, how you make your own luck comes from your own being, your own inside.
That's right. Like, I mean, I feel like sometimes the way we're raised, mm-hmm. as little boys and little girls is, you're kind of more quieted when you're a little girl. You're kind of, you don't really speak unless you're spoken, unless mm-hmm. you're spoken to. And I think that, culture is changing a lot. I mean, I've met a lot of younger people now that I don't feel like that's really so much. I feel like people have a much more broader psychological understanding of different cultures and sexuality and gender and mm-hmm. all kinds of stuff today, and that it's really evolving. So hopefully we don't have all those kind of issues, in the next 20, 50 years, whatever.
After a quick commercial break, stay close because we'll talk to Elizabeth, speaking of moms, about her mom and how she got her start.
All right.
The International Culinary Center is a proud sponsor of the HeritageRadioNetwork.org. The ICC, with locations in New York and California, provide cutting-edge education to future chefs, restaurateurs, and wine professionals. We're proud to claim Dan Barber, Bobby Flay, and David Chang among our honored alumni. This is Dorothy Cann Hamilton from Chef Story. Check out our ICC website at internationalculinarycenter.com.
Welcome back to Word of Mouth with Leyte Su on Heritage Radio Network. We have here live in studio Chef Elizabeth Faulkner, president of Women Chefs and Restaurateurs.
Hey.
Hello.
So, yeah, I wanted to mention also that at this conference, we talked about there being a lot of talent, but I mean, we really have so much talent. We have at our gala award center, we have Gail Simmons and Carla Hall emceeing it. I know.
Oh, my God. They're so cool.
Lydia Bastianich, one of the founders, of the amazing Italy and everything else, Lydia World Empire, is our keynote speaker. And then we have just a huge amount of chefs involved in every meal period. So not just the gala, but all of the breakfast, lunch, dinner, with all these great sponsors that we have for WCR. They're all using some, I thought it'd be really fun to just, we have never done it this way before, but we are connecting some specific sponsors to specific chefs mm-hmm. so they can use their product. And it's kind of fun because, I mean, I look at it like it's one of those competition shows, like, hey, can you use this ingredient and this ingredient? And and for the most part, all the chefs have been like, okay, that sounds cool. Yeah, great. Whatever.
Yeah.
And I just think it's going to be so fun because when you have a conference, I don't know how many conferences you go to. But
conferences, yeah.
But I want it to be like, it's a food thing. It has to be like boring. Tons of great food, right?
Yeah.
Constantly.
And otherwise, it's like a bad wedding.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, I just felt like we have this huge opportunity to do that. And then we have these after parties at some different venues around the city. And then we've got some tours offsite. So, which, I mean, it's just like action packed nonstop.
So is it one of those things where I buy one ticket and then I pick and choose where I go?
Well, we still have some passes for full registration available. If you go to our website, womenchefs.org, you can get we still have some, we have about like 20 full registration passes, I think. And then we have some day passes also. So that's an option if you can only go for one day.
Okay.
And then, and you can go to like we have a competition actually that I've pretty much produced for the past 2 years. And this will be the third one. We call it the WCR Food Games. Mm-hmm. And, actually, Kelly Choi and I are going to MC that.
Nice.
And I've got, it's really cool too. It's because it's live, it's not a television show. So we have like three teams, two members each. They each get a superstar coach. So I have like Annette Abney from Balabusta. And do you know her?
I don't.
Oh, I love her. She's so funny. Yeah. And Taim Falafel. And I have Sherry Yard.
Nice.
And Sherry Yard is so hilarious and so fun and just perfect for this. And she's in Los Angeles, but she's kind of all over the place these days doing some really amazing projects. And my other chef is Melissa Kelly from Maine, from Primo.
Mm-hmm.
And so their coaches, like, they can't touch the food, but they can coach the team on how they're going to win a round. So they do three rounds. They do an appetizer, entree, dessert. They have to use some ingredients that are sponsored products. There's a ton of great sponsors, so we have like a million different ingredients for them to play with anyway. And then
who are the contestants?
And there's lots of surprises. So they're members.
Oh, okay.
So we'll do a call for the membership to sign up for that. And then nobody has to do the walk of shame though. That's what I like about it.
Mm-hmm.
It's like I love the shows, but I hate having to like go home and miss a round. You know,
yeah.
I just want to see how people do in three rounds. So what's cool is that we'll go through those, the different rounds, and then they just pick a winner each time. And then, but usually everybody has an opportunity to win something. And then at the end, then they pick an overall team winner. And then we have a sudden death face-off for a huge grand prize of going on a Holland America cruise for two people. So,
oh, wow.
And their dish gets to go on the cruise too, which is pretty awesome.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So
that
last year
really
they were just like,
prize.
What?
What?
It was
no, I'm like,
super
what?
Cool.
That's like that one time I helped David Rosengarten launch his wine portfolio. When he started importing wine. So we did this like #SomSing karaoke competition.
Oh my God.
Late night at Tawar. And then the winner got to go on this like all expense paid, like private plane with David Rosengarten.
Wow.
And you got to, drink Riesling and champagne with like Philly cheesesteak with foie gras in it. And also went up to Maine and did like lobster.
God.
And yeah.
That sounds, I might have to think about a karaoke thing to do,
right?
Too,
I think that, so I was really nervous about that because I rented a karaoke machine and schlepped it. Well, I don't know how it got there, but we had a karaoke machine, and really it took people a couple of glasses of wine to actually pony up to the karaoke machine. I was going to get really upset if no one used it, you know?
I know, right?
Like,
yeah.
Right? So where are you from, Elizabeth?
Well, I grew up in, I was born in San Francisco. I grew up in suburban Los Angeles, and then I moved back to San Francisco, to finish art school.
Mm-hmm.
And then I started cooking. I worked at Williams-Sonoma part-time while I was finishing college. And
is it like the same one that's still there today? Because like, I went
no.
there. Okay.
No, it was the original store. It was on Sutter Street.
Okay.
And that Chuck Williams opened. And it was cool because it had a really nice kitchen. And my boss would just let me go back there and cook. She was like, oh, you're a really good cook. Just go back there and make stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I got out of college, I thought I wanted to get in a kitchen, but I didn't have any experience. And even though everybody said, oh, you know, you're a really good cook, blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that happens to a lot of people. And I've hired people like that too, later on. But, so I started working in a film production place. And then I took on a part-time job at a little cafe. I did work as a server for a second, but I didn't like the uniform.
Mm.
So I knew I belonged in the back of the house, not the front. And so really, it was hideous. can you see me in a black like skirt below the knees with black stockings and a pink polo shirt and a black tie? No,
that sounds like Minnie Mouse.
So wrong. I mean, I never wanted to be in a pink pastry box, and I certainly didn't want to wear a pink polo shirt. Anyway, but that was a long time ago. So then I worked in a little French bistro part time. I kind of just landed a job as a plater and dishwasher at night. And then I quickly moved into making all the desserts. And then they said, you know, would you like to be the chef here? Cause it was teeny, but it was really busy and fun. And I just loved the French waiters and the live jazz and just it was just crazy busy. I had like four croque monsieurs that would fit in this toaster oven, which would catch on fire all the time because of all the butter dripping on the bottom. And then eventually I staged at a restaurant called Masa's with Julian Serrano, a great chef that I learned everything in that sort of French brigade system kitchen. And I had a great pastry chef too that I worked in pastry. And when I asked to move into the other part of the kitchen, it wasn't an option. So
relegated to the ghetto.
The ghetto side of cooking, yeah. Unfortunately, because pastry in other countries, you know, is so highly respected, but it requires so much work to be a pastry chef or a savory chef. But the discipline of learning pastry is, I think, what's been so attractive to me and also made me such an organized savory chef too. I think it's a discipline that I wished everybody would have to go through in cooking. Mm-hmm. But anyway, so then I worked at Masa's and I ended up working for Tracy Desjardins at this restaurant called Elka in that hotel, the Miyako Hotel. And then I went with Tracy to open up Rubicon. And then I opened up Citizen Cake in 1997. And I just felt like I needed to open a pastry shop. At the time there was nothing really contemporary pastry wise going on, and all this plated dessert I was doing was really modern, and I needed to sort of translate that into bakery stuff.
So you have a huge sort of art bent, and tell me about that one like art project you did. It was just zany. Like, I love your art projects. The projection onto your lap while sitting on a toilet. I know. Every single thing I say that you do art-wise sounds zany, but it's...
Well, no, but a lot of the things I like to...
I love that.
You know, I guess I kind of like... I like experiences like that where you're like... it's unexpected. So I did this is, you know, when I was in film school, I created a loop of a film on a Super 8 projector that was mounted above a bathroom stall. And people would walk in and sit on the toilet, and the screen would be on your lap. So it was like a bird's eye view of streets, you know, from like a skyscraper, streets below, fire engines going by, porno magazines, pornographic magazines of like just flipping through the pages, and then fire, just like fire, like a fire.
Your lap close on fire. Fire.
and it was just in a loop, and it... You know, it was an installation. And I think that I keep coming back around to. I love to create these environments, whether it's a restaurant or a plate or somewhere unexpected. And I think more and more. I mean, I didn't tell you about this one, but I did this other project in school where it was called Black Espresso, Black Sorbet, and it was a really fun film that was a lot of just movement and some really cool music. And then I served espresso before because, you know, student films can be kind of long and boring for the audience. So I was like, I got to wake my people up. It's going to be jazzy. It's going to be fun. And it was just a lot of movement. It was almost like an orchestration of actually a lot of baristas working together.
Oh,
it was a lot of the footage and then just a lot of movement and lights and stuff like that. And then I served these chocolate-covered sorbet bonbons afterwards.
Oh, so you got voted most popular film, obviously.
People loved it,
inserted
of course.
I
gave them espresso
there.
And chocolate. You know? And so I like that kind of an unexpectedness, you know, in a place where you think that you know what's going to happen every moment.
What did your mom do? What did she do?
My mom is actually a dietitian.
Oh, really?
And my dad's an abstract painter. So
the exact mishmash of you or mom and dad.
Pretty much, yeah. I mean, and everybody likes to cook now, my brothers included. And I have a brother who's a rock musician.
What?
He's actually on tour with Beck right now.
Whoa.
And plays guitar. And I have another brother who lives in downtown Los Angeles, and he's a storyboard artist in the guild.
Yeah,
but he also does a lot of theater and film, and he's been working in a lot of films, and he's gonna move to New York I think soon.
You have like... this is not no like lawyer doctor family. No,
no, we're not. And sometimes I'm like, I wish we had somebody like that in our family. No, we're all artists for sure.
Let's see if anyone said anything to us on Instagram. So this is merely a this Can we, so somebody said, can we reach out to you via email to engage you to come speak to our Women's Chef Association in Minneapolis?
Oh, that's nice.
Big fans. Okay.
Sure.
Yay. Okay. So, you know, we'll write back on here.
Okay.
That's cool.
That's
Minneapolis.
Really nice.
Yeah.
I love Minneapolis. One of my favorite pizzerias is Lola Pizzeria out there. Oh my God. It's amazing. And Kim. Amazing pizzaiola.
I'll have to hit you up for your Minneapolis recommendations. I have not made my Minneapolis food trip yet.
Oh my God. There's so much good stuff there.
Yeah. Thank you so much for coming on today, Elizabeth.
Thank you. This is so fun.
So much fun. And stay close because in a couple of minutes, we're having on Matt Bostic, sommelier at Osteria Mozza out in LA on Gulp. Okay, how do you say these? Gagliopo, Quatina, and Timorasso. Three grapes that we don't know that he loves. Welcome back to Word of Mouth with Leyte Su on Heritage Radio Network. With just a couple of minutes left, we're going to wind down. With Matt Bostic, sommelier Osteria Mozza, on some of his most fun grape varieties. Hi, Matt.
Hey, how are you?
Good. Thanks for coming on.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
All right, so what do we got? Like, what should we be drinking at your spot?
So yeah, Italy has over 3,000 grapes, and there's so many grapes going on there that a lot of people get lost. They don't really haven't heard of a lot of cool things. So today I wanted to just talk about, you know, three unique grapes that are unique to Italy alone, and just kind of shine some light on these amazing grape varietals that people probably have not heard of.
And then you can say them very elegantly for me too. Thank you. Gagliopo. You can say them, you can pronounce them very elegantly for me. Gagliopo.
Yeah, for sure. So we have Gagliopo, which is out of Calabria, mm-hmm. in southern Italy. We have Croatina, which is a grape also known as Bernarda in Lombardy, but this is coming out of Piemonte. And then a white varietal called Timorasso, which I think is one of the most unique grapes in Italy right now, in my opinion.
Okay, so let's start with Timorasso. How does it taste? What are we eating it with?
So yeah, Timorasso is a unique grape. In the late 80s, people were tearing up the vines to replant it with Cortese to make Gabbi di Gabbi, because that was all the rage. But Timorasso is a grape very similar to Riesling in style. Medium body, light, bright fruit, orchard fruit of green apples. As it gets older, it really starts to bring on that soft petrol note, which is just absolutely gorgeous.
Nice.
In my opinion, it goes amazing with mushrooms.
People who don't like mushrooms cannot be friends with me.
You know, at Pizzeria Mozza, we have a pizza called the Funghi Misti, which is the best mushroom pizza I've ever tasted in my life. with this wine, it shines. It pulls out the earth tones while delivering bright fruit, bright acidity to help finish off the cheese, and it's just... It really is something that people are missing out, and with the spring coming up, it's wine that people really need to check out.
All right, so next up, Croatina.
So Croatina out of Piemonte again. This is one of my favorite grapes because of the reason that it hits that flavor profile that a lot of people are looking for. It has a deep, robust red fruit, dark plum, you know, the dark cherry, without being all the way to a full body wine similar to a Cabernet Sauvignon. This is going to be closer to a Dolcetto in style with that medium body, a lot of juice. But it does have some nice kind of tannins that show up on the back. But they're fruit tannins and not wood tannins, which is a really nice thing for most of the wines coming out of Piemonte.
Awesome. And Gallioppo.
Now, Gallioppo is fun. I like to refer to Gallioppo as the southern Italian cousin of Sangiovese. It's kind of it's a southern Italian grape that has the one more shirt button undone, kind of leaning back in his chair, kind of that more rustic style. You get, really nice, deep aromas of plum, raspberry, a lot of violets on this. But in Calabria, the wines are super rustic, so you get this beautiful kind of soft pepper notes, really nice mouth-filling tannins. It really is just an amazing full-bodied wine.
Well, I can't wait to come in person. I'm coming out to LA again on Saturday for a week to try all of these three grapes. And I'm also going to Venice and Puglia the next week. So I'll have to grab your Italy recommendations, Matt.
Yes, for sure. We can talk more about any Italian wine that you'd like.
Thank you so much.
You're very welcome, and I'll see you when you come to LA.
Live in studio, we had Chef Elizabeth Faulkner, president of Women Chefs and Restaurateurs. Check out their upcoming conference in New York City. She's at Chef Faulkner. It's spelled F-A-L-K-N-E-R, no U. And you can follow them at WCR Women Chefs with an S. Hashtag WCR 2015 and hashtag Bigger Bite. This year's conference is all about taking a bigger bite out of your career. At the Green Market, Carrie Heffernan with the first whispers of springtime. We're live 2 p.m. Eastern Wednesdays on Word of Mouth, heritageradionetwork.org. I'm your host, Leyte Su. Thank you so much for listening. Until next time, eat well, be swell.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us with questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.